Sometimes when we ask people, you know, where did they go to school, they might give an answer like, I went to the school of hard knocks. And a recognition that there are lessons we learn in life that sometimes we don't learn, experience in the world of academic institutions. Sometimes there are individuals that become very smart in the subjects that they study in school, but there's a way in which that book learning doesn't really translate into everyday living. And what we find is that life has lessons for us. And it's not so much just life that has lessons for us, but God in our experiences of life has lessons for us. And what we need to understand is that as human beings, we are never out of school. We may not be enrolled in an institution of learning, even of higher learning, but every human being still is in school as he or she goes through life. Many flunk. They don't grasp the lesson. And instead of coming to the conclusion that is really for their best good, they continue to resist the teacher. God has lessons for his people. And some of those lessons are brought about in hard experiences of life. And as you and I continue our study in the book of Ecclesiastes, we find that Solomon is addressing one of those hard issues of life and explaining to us that God uses these hard lessons of life to teach us some very fundamental and important truths that are valuable for every one of us. So with that in mind, I'd like you to turn with me to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. And we want to look at what Solomon, as an instrument in the hand of the Lord, is telling us about the lessons that are associated with the injustices that we far too often see and maybe at times experience as we go through life. What I'd like us to do is to look at Ecclesiastes 3, and I want to begin reading in verse 11. And I remind you that in this book, we are now in the section where Solomon is developing the theme. And that theme is, nothing in the temporal world will give you meaning and satisfaction and fulfillment in life. The only place any human being will find the ultimate purpose and meaning in life is when it is built upon and centered in the Lord and in the eternal spiritual that He provides. And in this immediate context, Solomon is talking about God's sovereign working. And he says in verse 11, He has made everything appropriate, that is, fitting it together as only He is able to meet what is needed at its time. And He has also set eternity in the heart of men, yet so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in his labor, it is the gift of God. And I know that everything God does will remain forever. There is nothing to add to it, there is nothing to take away from it. For God is so worked that men should fear Him. That which has already been is that which will be and has already been as well. For God seeks what has passed by. Furthermore, I have seen under the sun that in the place of justice there is wickedness, and in the place of righteousness there is wickedness. And I said to myself, God will judge both the righteous and the wicked. A time for every matter and for every deed is there. And I said to myself concerning the sons of men, God has surely tested them in order that they may see that they are but beasts. For the fate of the sons of men and the fate of beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. Indeed, they all have the same breath, and there is no advantage for man over beasts, for all is vanity. All go to the same place. All came from the dust, and all return to the dust. Who knows that the breath of man ascends upward, and the breath of the beast descends downward to the earth? And I have seen that nothing is better than that a man should be happy in his activities, for that is his lot. For who will bring him to see what will occur after him? And in this section, Solomon is dealing with the whole question of injustices. And what he is telling us is that in this providential working of God, God also includes injustices. And he has included injustices because there are lessons that he is teaching us from that injustice. The first thing that I find to be very beneficial when I see the reality of what Solomon addresses here is that the Bible never excludes or skirts away from the things that are problematic for us in our understanding. That, to me, is part of the beauty of Christianity. I don't have to ignore some aspect of life and say I don't have an answer for it. The beauty of biblical Christianity is the fact that God provides us with an answer of all the things that become sometimes difficult for us to comprehend and understand. And here Solomon is saying, well, you're hearing me say, God is in charge of all things. He is the one that has established the time to be born and the time to die and everything in between. He is the one that has made everything appropriate for his time. You're telling me that the God who rules in the heavens is a righteous God. Then how is it in the world we see so much injustice taking place? And as Solomon addresses this, he says, the place where we should expect to see justice and righteousness, what do we find? Well, it's translated in my Bible as wickedness. And the Hebrew word that is translated here as wickedness is one that means when we look for justice and we look for righteousness in the place where it is supposed to be, what we find manifested is a perversion. We find a distorting, kind of a bending of the rules and the regulations. Isn't that what we find? We expect to see justice in the place where it's established to take place. And if I go back to the days of Solomon, when Solomon would speak about where do you expect to find justice and righteousness, you expect to find it in the administration of those who have the authority over the nation and over the people. And so you and I, when we think of it in this world today, and we look at the nations of the earth, what is it that we should anticipate? What is it that we should desire in the experience of those who are part of that nation coming from the rulers who have authority over that nation? A fair shake. For righteousness to be upheld. In our own land, we talk about, well, we got a constitution and how it impacts those of us who are under its authority. And what you and I expect and anticipate is that those who are in a place of authority, regardless of which branch of government they are in, are individuals that should uphold the constitution. They are individuals that should establish justice and righteousness. And what we find is a bending, a twisting, a perversion, a distorting. In some ways, we should be surprised if we ever find righteousness. Do you know why? because as human beings, we're perverted. As human beings, we're twisted. As human beings, we're distorted. We have become corrupt. And what is the greatest problem for any human being living in this world? It isn't the government. It isn't the society. It isn't the circumstances in which one lives. But as Jeremiah says, the heart is deceitful beyond everything else. It is desperately sick, and people can't even understand the depths of that depravity. That's why God has to give you a new heart. It can't be reformed. It can't be improved. It can't just be whitewashed. It can be, you know, molded and manipulated to appear to be ethical and upright. But the reality is, if the individual in the place of government is not someone that has had the work of grace that takes place within their heart, they are of their father the devil. And the desires of their father they want to do. And what would that be? To manipulate the system for their own benefit and exaltation. And so that's what Solomon is addressing. Here we find that where we expect to see righteousness and justice upheld, it becomes more of an exception rather than the rule. I don't want to give the impression that there's never been an upholding of what is right and correct. I don't want to ever give the impression that what we're finding here is Solomon is saying it's all corrupt and deceitful. But what Solomon is indicating for us is that as you and I look at the providential working of God, we find there are human instruments in places of leadership, and what we desire and what we hope to see is that they are upholding justice and righteousness. But instead, what is taking place is the reality of a distorting and a perversion of it. And so Solomon says in verse 17, God is the one who will judge the righteous man and the wicked man. It is a realization, first and foremost, as we had seen last time, God is very much aware of what's going on in this world that is under His control. And He is more aware of it than you and I are, because as it says in Hebrews chapter 4, He's the one that, you know, judges the thoughts and the intents of the heart. Or when I start reading the books that you and I would call the books of the prophets, like Isaiah, Jeremiah, Hosea, Amos, etc. You want to know what you find out in there? God is acutely aware of the conditions of the nations and the leaders of those nations and the things that are happening in the nations. And God makes it very clear that He is the one that utilizes these nations and the leaders of those nations to accomplish His purpose. So when He had to execute judgment on Israel, He calls Nebuchadnezzar His servant. And in the same way, when He was raising up a ruler in the Medo-Persian Empire to judge the Babylonians, He calls Cyrus His servant. And what we find is that the nations of the earth are being used by God to fulfill and accomplish His purpose. And He is acutely aware of the fact that instead of them upholding the righteousness that's in keeping with His character, there's a perversion of it. And so He says through the prophets, the reason He is raising up Cyrus and those who are associated with the Medo-Persian Empire is to punish the Babylonians for their wickedness. And then He says, after that, I'm raising up the Greek Empire. And part of the responsibility of what the Greek Empire will do is they will punish the Medo-Persians for their wickedness. He is a righteous judge. He is fully aware of what's going on. And He is the one that will bring about the judgment. It's why both in Deuteronomy 32 and in Hebrews chapter 10, God says, vengeance is mine. I will repay. And that's what Solomon is saying here. God is the one who judges the righteous as well as the wicked. One of the things that I know for myself at times I fall prey to is thinking about the reality that, you know, it's something I want to see of God judging the wicked. But the reality is, when God judges, it's across the board, isn't it? It includes what you and I might think as almost insignificant expressions of perversion, as well as those that are blatant expressions of perversion. And that's why Solomon says, there's no one exempt. He's the one that judges the righteous, as well as judging the wicked. Because in many ways, the expressions of the wicked are just a bigger manifestation of what's true in all of our hearts if grace is not at work. We look at individuals and we see the horror of what they commit, and all they're doing is saying, here I am, you in the mirror. This is what's true of your heart if grace is not at work within you. Because how many are good? How many are righteous? How many genuinely seek after God? The answer every time is no, not one. And to say something that tritely at times we'll say is a genuine expression of where we are as human beings apart from grace, and that is when I see these great atrocities, but by the grace of God, that's me. God is the one that will judge the righteous along with the wicked. And he says in verse 17, there is a time for every matter and for every deed. And it is a recognition that God is the one who will bring about the appropriate justice that needs to take place. And there's really two aspects of this justice that God brings about. And the first is what we could call retributive justice. In other words, in time, God brings about the circumstance that is the appropriate judgment of those who have been the instruments of perverting justice or of displaying wickedness, retributive justice. One great example of that, in a lesser sense, and has to do with how God chastens and disciplines his people, would be when we look at God dealing with Jacob. What was Jacob's big problem? He was a conniver. Jacob was deceitful. Jacob tried to manipulate things for his own benefit. And he was even encouraged by mom to do so. Isn't that right? Now, I'm not pointing my finger at Jacob. I'm not trying to put Jacob down. I want you to understand a lesson of how God deals with you. And so, in order to provide some retributive justice to Jacob, where did God send Jacob? Uncle Laban. And for Jacob, when it came to conniving and plotting and deceiving to get his own way, he was just a baby. Uncle Laban was a master of deceitful operations and using people to get his own way. Be sure you understand the chastening of the Lord in your own life. Because the reality is, as a man sows, so he'll reap. And part of it is, God brings us into circumstances and brings individuals into our lives that are a big picture of what may be true with us that God is going to root out. Just like he did with Jacob. And it is retributive justice. So in the same way, when there are individuals who are in positions of authority and those individuals are perverting, bending, twisting, and distorting righteousness and justice, God has a way of bringing it back upon them as well. Go with me to the book of Psalms, to Psalm 37. In Psalm 37, verse 12, it says, "The wicked plots against the righteous and gnashes at him with his teeth." And so as the wicked is plotting, trying to take advantage of the righteous, how does God respond? The Lord laughs at him. "You gotta be kidding me. This individual actually thinks he's going to get away with it? This individual actually thinks he doesn't have an accountability to me?" The Lord laughs at him. "For he sees his day is coming." Why is his day of judgment coming? Because God is the one that has a time and a place for every event. And he is going to turn the tables. Notice how he says it. Verse 14, "The wicked have drawn the sword. They have bent their bow to cast down the afflicted and needy, to slay those who are upright in conduct." And what will happen is their sword will enter their own heart and their bows will be broken. Now, it doesn't mean that in every instant you and I will see it. But it's a recognition that there is something happening in the providential working of God, where he pays back an individual in kind for how that individual has dealt with others. Retributive justice. And that's why Paul, in his letter to the Galatians, makes it very clear where he says, "Don't be deceived. God's not mocked. But what a man sows, that's what a man will reap." And God has a way of doing what needs to be done to control the expressions of evil and wickedness, to purify his children as he makes them more like Jesus Christ, and to punish the wicked for how they have afflicted others, and in particular, his people. So as we look at the circumstances in life, Solomon says, "I'm not expecting to see justice in what men seek to do. I recognize there's a supreme court and a supreme ruler over all things. And he is the one that will bring about justice on the earth. He will pay back individuals according to how they have dealt with others." Not only is that to be understood, but there is a coming judgment of all men, isn't there? And this doesn't have to do with what happens to us in our daily circumstances in life and how God uses the circumstances in our life to further prepare his children for glory while suppressing and subduing the expressions of evil in the world and paying back the evildoers in kind for what they've done. But what I need to understand is one day I have to stand before him. That's why when Paul addressed the philosophers and leaders of Greece on Mars Hill, he said, "God overlooked the ignorance in days gone by, but now he has declared to all men the importance of repentance because he has fixed a day." It's not up in the air. God's already determined the day of judgment. He has fixed the day when he will judge the world in righteousness, and he's going to do so through the one that is often ridiculed and mocked by the people of the earth, through the man whom he has appointed, and he's furnished proof to all individuals that this is the coming judge. You know how? He raised him from the dead. It is the recognition that Jesus Christ is the coming ruler who will judge all individuals, and the pronouncement that he makes has eternal significance for each human being. And so Solomon says back in Ecclesiastes, there is a recognition that I have to say that God will judge the righteous man and the wicked man. He has a time for every matter and every deed. And he says, God has surely tested them in order for them to see that they are beast. Verse 18. It's a twofold understanding that Solomon gives us here, and it has to do with the lessons that come from injustice. The first is, he says, that God has surely tested men. And this word that is translated to test is a word which means to try or to assay. It's the idea of where, you know, you're trying to find out the genuineness of a mineral or a gem. And so you put it into a situation where anything that is not part of the genuine gem or mineral is burned away. And what is God using to assay, to test, to show the real character of human beings? Injustice. Because in injustice, the character of the individual is made manifest. Now, part of it is, how does the individual handle the authority that he or she is given? Is it looked upon as an opportunity to twist, bend, distort, to take advantage of something for myself? And when I am the object of an expression of injustice, how do I handle it? Do I become bitter? Do I have that thinking inside, I'm going to get back at you? I can't wait until you get what you deserve? The circumstance of injustice shows the condition or the character of the individual. Examples. How bitter was Daniel with the injustices that happened to him? See, I don't find any embitterment with him. In fact, he is concerned that Nebuchadnezzar doesn't have the judgment of God that comes upon him. He holds no ill will against Darius after he was cast into the lion's den. How about if I think of Jeremiah? Here he is left back in the land. You familiar with the book of Jeremiah and then his letter that we know as the Book of Lamentations? And instead of saying, Lord, I want you to really put the boom down on them, he says, oh, that my eyes were just rivers of water that I might weep for this people. What did they do to him? They ignored him. They mocked him. They whipped him. They beat him. They deprived him of physical sustenance. They threw him into a cistern and he sunk down in the mud and had to be pulled out of it. He was manipulated and deceived by people in authority. What was his response? The injustices of life demonstrate the character. God tests us in the experiences of injustice. It's a valuable life lesson. It shows us what we're really made of. What did Stephen do? They began to stone him to death. Lord, forgive them. Don't hold this charge against them. And it's because Stephen was manifesting the character that was seen in his Lord. Isn't that right? As Peter describes it in his first epistle, he didn't utter any threats. He didn't speak ill concerning them, but he kept entrusting himself to the one who judges righteously. So when you're given an opportunity and nobody's watching but God, are you using that position of authority, you know, to butter your own bread, to benefit yourself, or has God done something in your heart and you can be responsible to uphold what's right even when no one's looking? The circumstance demonstrates your character. And on the other side, when you are the object of injustice, how is it you respond? I brought up the example last week of the man Michael Morton and how the prosecutor withheld evidence that would have exonerated him. And instead he was found guilty and spent 25 years in prison. And when things came to light, he had the opportunity to stand before the man that had so manipulated the system that put him in prison. And because of God working in grace while he was in prison, Michael Morton told him, "I forgive you." That's great grace, isn't it? But that's what Solomon's saying here. Things are going to happen to us in a small scale that aren't fair, and in a larger scale at times, like which has happened to God's people. You know, why were the Christians in the Colosseum? Why were they abused by government throughout the history of the church? Because of injustice. But how is it that we respond when injustice comes to us? Because one of the important life lessons is that in these situations of injustice, God demonstrates what we're really made of. And the other important aspect of the lesson is, as it says here, in order that we may know that we are but beasts. Now, first, in light of where we are today, I have to make sure you understand Solomon is not saying, according to the humanistic evolutionary concept, that you're no different than the beasts of the earth. What is he emphasizing? You're a creature. Because just like the beast dies, could be your pet dog, your pet cat. It could be the hamburger that you had, right, from the steer. That creature is subject to death. And so are you. And God uses these circumstances in life to cause us to recognize there's got to be more to it than this. Because we're temporary, we're transitory. We don't have the capability of correcting all of the injustices that are happening in the world. We can't straighten what has bent, and we can't bend what is straight. There is a limit in our creatureliness of what we can do. And ultimately, an accountability that we have as creatures to our Creator. Just like the animal functions according to the creaturely design that God gave to that creature, so it is for us as human beings. We have limitations of what we can do within the design that God has made of us. And you and I need to recognize that when we look at these injustices in life and we see how things are unfolding, it brings us to the end of ourselves, and we recognize if God isn't the one that executes justice and brings about the judgment, there's no other place we can find it. It shows us our limitation. It shows us our accountability. It causes us to recognize our creatureliness. And when I start to come to grips with that, it causes me to recognize I have to answer to my Creator. And since I have to answer to my Creator, I need to be careful about how I live in this world. Because He's the one that judges the righteous as well as the wicked. And when I start to understand that, if I bring it into New Testament jargon, it causes me to recognize that if Jesus Christ does not wash me and make me acceptable to God because of my wrongdoings, because of my perversions, I have no hope. But the beauty is, there's no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. And as we go through the circumstances of life and we find, I don't have an answer for what's going on, I have the realization that I have to give an account to God. And if I'm not clothed in the blood of Christ and in His righteousness, I have no hope. God's providence includes things that are hard for us to understand. But at least we can recognize that in the providence of God and His inclusion of injustice, He has done so to teach us some very important lessons. The first is that what we see displayed in the lives of people in authority is just a picture of what's going on in every human being apart from the work of grace. The second is it causes us to see that when people have that position of authority, or they are the object of injustice, it demonstrates the true character of the individual. And as we go through life and we see expressions of injustice, what it should do to us is teach us there's limits of what we're able to do because we're creatures. And due to that, we have an accountability to our God, and we need to make sure that we remember our Creator, not just when we're old, but in the days of our youth, because He's the one before whom we all must stand. Let's pray.